When they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them, and some scribes arguing with them. When the whole crowd saw him, they were immediately overcome with awe, and they ran forward to greet him. He asked them, "What are you arguing about with them?" Someone from the crowd answered him, "Teacher, I brought you my son. He has a spirit that makes him unable to speak. And whenever it seizes him, it dashes him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. And I asked your disciples to cast it out, but they could not do so." He answered them, "You faithless generation, how much longer must I be among you? How much longer must I put up with you? Bring him to me." And they brought the boy to him. When the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From childhood. It has often cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you are able to do anything, have pity on us and help us." Jesus said to him, "If you are able, all things can be done for the one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out, "I believe, help my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You spirit that keeps this boy from speaking and hearing, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." After crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he was able to stand. When he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" He said to them, "This kind can come out only through prayer." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Friends, would you pray with me? O Holy One, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be ever and always acceptable unto you. For you are our rock and our redeemer, our Alpha and our Omega, our beginning and our end, the source of our love, and a wellspring of our joys. May there be hope. Amen. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? You probably heard words like that from young backseat passengers when you're on the way for a long, long journey. Are we there yet? Plane friends that are right beside you, your kids, and they don't like sitting and waiting and waiting and waiting. I've been wondering, we've been going through this sermon series for 6 weeks now, and I've been kind of wondering if in the back of your minds, if some of you are saying, "Are we there yet, Scott? Are we there yet?" Well, this morning we are. We're coming to the very end of our sermon series, Walking Boldly into the Future. We started all the way back to Rally Sunday, back to Welcome Sunday, rather, September the 11th, that first Sunday back after Labor Day weekend, when we kind of all come back from our summer busy lives, kind of summer rest, and we start to kind of reform and be the church and move into the future. And we're here. When I was thinking about this series back in August, I was thinking really it would be helpful for us as we move ahead into the future for us to consider where we're going as a church. So much change is alive here at Northwood. Conversations about this physical building and what that will look like in the future. Conversations about your new ministry staff were indeed very alive as well. So much change, so much new to a community, a lot. And for us to prayerfully and mindfully think about where we're going as a community, for us to think about how we're going to move ahead into the future is indeed significant and important work. Well, you made your decisions, and it looks like we're stuck with each other. And I couldn't be any more excited to be your coordinating minister going forward. As I was saying with Carrie at the opening, I'm just delighted to team with her. I'm so excited about being part of this congregation and the salt of the earth kind of people that really make this such an amazing church. I'd said before I even came for that three-month term that this was one of the places where I used to just kind of come because I loved the spirit that was here. I loved the energy of the people, and of course, Will is a good friend of mine. So for all those kind of good reasons, that brought me to Northwood when I had a Sunday free when I was just next door at Langley United. But we now move ahead. We now move ahead into the future with a new team, lots of conversations. And I'd just like to back up a little bit and for us just to kind of remind ourselves where we were in these conversations each week. We began with vision, walking boldly into the future with a vision. And we talked about that call story of Paul, where the scales literally flaked off, fell from his eyes, and he was given this new vision to see. He would be Paul. He would be the apostle, the first bishop, really, of the church, the missionary that would support all the churches as they expand throughout the land. And that was the kind of conversation we talked about. We also talked about, I suggested there was another call story. There was a call story of Ananias, who was a faithful follower of Jesus, but he was called into this radical challenge in his life to actually go to Saul. While Saul was regaining his sight and to care for him and feed him, likely would have been a death sentence, he felt. But he went and he did what he was called to do. We considered, we pondered, what are we called to see? What is our vision as a congregation moving ahead? What are we called to see as Northwood in the Fleetwood, Surrey area? Our mission, indeed, is a wonderful, powerful statement. It's right on our bulletins and our website. We're embracing the community with the love of Christ. But with thinking about vision, how do you sharpen your focus around that? How is that lived out in the next 5 years? What does that specifically look like in 10 years, in 25 years? How will we live out our vision of being a church in this community? Well, we moved from vision and then conversation shifted to purpose. We talked about purpose, about finding our purpose in life. We remember that healing story from John 5 when there were several people, the lame, the blind, and the paralyzed people waiting for that healing pool that they could enter in and receive its healing powers. And we were reminded that in that healing pool, there was only one person, the first one in, that actually receives the gift of healing. There was one character in the story that was the main focus, remember? 38 years he'd been waiting and waiting and waiting so patiently. Jesus goes up to him and he says, "Do you want to be healed?" He says, "Yes." He says, "Stand up, take your mat, and walk." And we considered our individual purposes, how we individually are uniquely blessed and gifted to live out our ministry in the world. And with that being Terry Fox Sunday, we thought about the amazing legacy of Terry and how he inspires so many of us with the individual strengths and challenges he has and how he lived out his call to do what he did. We talk about other people that inspired us, the strength of people overcoming addictions and the 12-step people that come overcome addictions and how they live out their life in healthy ways going ahead. And then we talked about people who had lost a partner, a loved one. And we talked about how they are overcoming grief and moving ahead in their lives as well. With Rally Sunday coming up the following week, remember, we talked a bit about our individual purpose, what we are called uniquely to do with our gifts, with our specific blessings, and how we are called to be a blessing to this church and to the world. It was interesting how several people came forward in new ways, wanting to express their ministry, their gifts in new ways here at the church. It was incredibly exciting. And then we closed with those words that so many of us kind of nodded our heads and knew, but they were so affirming, from St. Teresa of Avila, that Christ has no body but ours, no hands or feet but ours. Ours are the eyes upon which Christ looks upon the world with compassion, and Christ has no body but ours. We must continue to be purpose-driven people, living out our unique purpose through this church and into the world. Well, we kind of moved towards about almost halfway in our third week, and we talked about fear. Fear indeed is a reality. It's a part of walking boldly into the future. Kind of midpoint in the journey where conversation starts to get tough, the conversation starts to get difficult and a little bit scary, and we start naturally to get afraid. The text that we evaluated teaches us there are only certain things that we need to be afraid of. Text says the only thing we need to be afraid of are those things that take us away from God. Those things that take us away from our journey of faith. Those things that take away from our spiritual growth and health. Nothing else we need to pay attention to. The invitation in that time, in that day, was to move away from being afraid, but for us to live with not fear, but reverence. Remember, we introduced that Hebrew word of yare, and it had fear, but it also had a deep meaning of reverence, that indeed we are deeply called and gifted people, called to use our gifts and our strengths and our talents, and we should do it with reverence, because this is God's work. This is your call to live out your faith in the world, and God wants you to do it well. We next moved on to talking about grace. It was Worldwide Communion Sunday, and we talked about that wonderful passage from the Corinthians where Paul was challenging them that they were indeed not living out the mandate of being a community, coming to the Lord's table and celebrating Holy Communion, that indeed not all were included. I introduced you to a new person that I've been following, Nadia Bowles Weber, a Lutheran minister from Denver, Colorado, who founded the House for All Saints and Sinners, an amazing community that has been forged primarily including people that are addicts in recovery, community that has been built around forgiveness and empathy and love. And I shared the words that she gives to her community when new people come into that place, and I think those words were so wonderfully powerful. She said, there will be a point when the church or someone within this church will disappoint you, will hurt you. Or there'll be a point when you will hurt someone or disappoint someone in this church. And she goes on to say, at that point, please, please, please do not walk away. She says, please don't walk away, because if you do, you will miss the grace. You will miss the power of forgiveness. You will miss the gift of reconciliation. She said, there are some times in our lives when we need to offer words like, I'm sorry and I forgive you. Don't miss the grace. And we were reminded of the power, the importance for us to continue to found this community, to found it as a community of grace and forgiveness and reconciliation as we move ahead in such challenging times. And last week, we focused on gratitude on Thanksgiving Sunday. And we talked about the 10 lepers being healed, and that one leper, that one lone Samaritan leper, the foreigner who came all the way back to Jesus, the only one who did it, and said, thank you. We pondered what was it that compelled him to come back rather than the other 9 that just received the healing and carry on in their day. What I suggested is that Samaritan leper was so far removed from the inner circle, so far removed from place of privilege, from the community of acceptance, that it just seemed only natural that he would have to come back, say thank you for doing something so absolutely amazing, whereas the rest of them just simply took it for granted. Indeed, it's challenging for us, we pondered. It's so challenging for us because we live in a wonderful first world country like Canada. Most of us are middle class earners. We have a relatively comfortable life. We flip on the lights, and usually they come on except for power outages. We turn on the tap, and then we have water that comes out, and it's water that we can drink. It takes so much for granted. Indeed, the challenge for us always in such privileged ways is for us to be people with an attitude of gratitude. And we're reminded that we indeed, as people here of the church, we're its gatekeepers. We're the ones that choose whether we welcome people or not. We're the ones that choose whether we have programming and things that will appeal to those that are all on the outside and bring them in, or whether we do things that are more insular. Kind of a conversation about a bit of both, indeed. But indeed, it's that call to be aware, so deeply aware, the gratitude that we have, how blessed we are, and to share that with everyone else that we can. Wow. That's quite a challenge to be the church, isn't it? It's amazing you still come. Well, moving ahead, it's going to be critical for us. I think it's going to be critical for us to always be mindful of those components of ministry, of vision, purpose, of reverence, of grace, and of thanksgiving. But there's one last piece, and I wanted to save it to the end. Not because it's any more important than the others, but because I think it kind of serves as kind of an overarching essence of what we do as a church. And that essence is hope. We are called to walk boldly into the future, always being people of hope. Hope is that thing that helps us through the good times and the bad. Hope is that thing that helps us through the ups and the downs of life. Hope is that oxygen that we get when we aren't sure if we can take another breath. Hope is that glue that bonds us together when we're getting together, when we're getting along like oil and water. Hope is absolutely essential for communities of faith to live ahead into the future. Now, it might seem like I'm preaching to the choir. I guess I kind of am a bit. Okay, don't listen. It might seem like that. But I'd like to suggest that we have room in our life for hope. We should be, even more than we think we are, people of hope. And I'd like to explain what I mean by that. The text has a very familiar passage. It is so familiar, it has been so profoundly misquoted that I think it's important for us to take it apart a little bit. Jesus says to the father of the son that was possessed by a demon, he says, "All things can be done for the one who believes." You ever heard people kind of quote that one? We've heard those kind of things, haven't we? I like the NIV version even more. It's even more powerful. Everything is possible for the one who believes. Historically, this text has been chronically misinterpreted by a movement called the Prosperity Gospel. It's an interesting group. Joel Osteen is kind of one of the proponents of Prosperity Gospel, if you ever see him on TV. But it's that kind of movement that believes we can get anything we want from God with prayer. It's kind of like a genie in the bottle, rub the bottle, and we will get anything we want from God with prayer. It's kind of that chronic misinterpretation, and it's so dangerous because it's been given as a prescription for wealth for people. It's been given as a prescription for people guaranteeing for a loved one or a personal healing that they need. And we know that this is not the way God works. This is not the way God works. We cannot dictate to God what we want in our personal lives. We need to come to God in prayer with hope, but we can't dictate to God what the end point is going to look like. Now, the flip side of this interpretation is equally dangerous, and it's one that I think I relate to a lot more, and I suspect you might too as well. It's that lack of trust in God, that lack of hope that God will intervene, that lack of trust in God's power, in God's healing, that lack of hope that we have. What I think was missing in the father's dialogue with Jesus was hope. He did not have hope that God would intervene and offer healing. And I think that's been one of the profound challenges for liberal, progressive Christians, because so many of us pray in this way. We leave an option, we leave a huge big window open for God not to act and intervene. We believe that, well, God's too busy to be involved with my life. I'm just a little speck in the universe compared to the rest of this vast universe. How much do I really matter? And I think in some ways, this is not a faithful response to the text. Some of the earlier texts we read, I mean, God knows the number of hairs on our heads. God, when a sparrow falls from the sky, God cares. We are deeply precious to God. And it is good and it is faithful for us to pray with hope. We can't pray with hope, giving the endpoint destination of what we want, But we can come to God, praying for God to be part of the solution. Sometimes that solution involves us participating in it as well. This is a good and faithful response for us to have hope. Hope that God will act. Hope that God will intervene. Hope that God will be present in those difficult times. Not that we'll get what we want, but indeed that we get what we need. So may we be people of hope in those hard times that will lie ahead for us. May we know that God will be there with us. In the dark periods of life, may we be people of hope, hoping that God would be there in mysterious ways beyond that which we can ask or imagine. May we be people of hope. So as we walk boldly into the future, may that future be one where we are deeply mindful of our call as Christians to be aware of the vision that God gives us for God's church in the world, of the purpose that we each and individually have with our unique gifts and expressing them. May we do it with deep reverence and prayer. May we create a culture of grace and reverence and understanding. May we be a people of gratitude, so appreciative of our gifts and our blessings that we naturally want to share them with others. And may we always, always be people of hope, knowing that God will act, that God will be here in our darkness and in our light. May it be so. Amen.